Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is Irina Lagunina, Director of Special Projects at RFERL's Russian Service. Irina, thanks for joining me on our recent Twitter Spaces conversation about Ukraine, and thanks for joining me on this podcast today.
Oh, thank you for inviting, Steve.
Okay. Now, on Twitter, we spoke about what might be next for Ukraine, with more than 100,000 Russian troops deployed near its borders, and U.S. officials continuing to warn that Russia could launch a new invasion, potentially a large-scale attack, pretty much any day. That was on February 3rd, and the situation hasn't changed very much since then. If anything, it seems more tense. There are more Russian troops than before, and the United States advised U.S. citizens to leave Ukraine over the weekend, saying an invasion could come this week. And there's also been no lessening of the tension following a phone call, I believe that was on Saturday, between U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin. Now, Russia has said repeatedly that it has no plans to invade, and a flurry of diplomacy continues. The new German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev today and with Putin in Moscow tomorrow. Irina, do you think this week will bring any clarity, a Russian invasion of Ukraine, God forbid, or some clear indication that it's not going to happen?
Well, Steve, it's really difficult to say, and I don't think that anybody can predict what the Kremlin will be doing right now. Well, first of all, the latest developments are very worrying because in spite of the flurry of diplomatic activity around Russian military presence on the Ukrainian border, there are indications and a lot of evidence collected and published yesterday by the conflict intelligence team. This is the group that is following the troops movement and troops deployment in around Ukraine and in Russia. So they noticed that even those troops that were already pulled around the Ukrainian border are now moving closer to the border itself. And that's very worrying because that the distance between the border and the troop deployment, let's say 10 days ago, was pretty close. But right now it's literally moving to the border of the neighboring country. So that's the first development, which is really worrying. The second development is the fact that Russia practically blocked the large equatorium of Black Sea and the Azov Sea, stating that it has the naval maneuvers in the area, and Ukraine is practically blocked. Ukrainian specialists now are trying to measure the depth of the Black Sea in order to understand how to continue the naval shipments and sea commerce routes, how to disrupt deliveries through the Black Sea. The third worrisome development actually came today and right now, and this is the fact that Kremlin announced that President Putin will have two working meetings, and the two persons whom he will see today are the Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov and the Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu. Now, those are the two major figures that will be kind of in the center of the military conflict if it starts. And the fact that out of the whole, Kremlin team and the whole government, Putin is meeting with those two, really indicates that some sort of decision-making is most probably going on in Kremlin at the moment, Steve.
Right. And yeah, that is a worrying development. You know, of course, it's hard to know, you know, as you say, hard to predict what will happen and hard to know, you know, how much of this is kind of posturing and how much is real decision making. But, you know, there are other kind of signs that are troubling as well. I mean, I guess, you know, there has been this flurry of diplomacy, but I believe the German chancellor's visit tomorrow to Moscow is kind of the last, I guess, concrete thing that's scheduled to happen along these lines, I believe, for some time. Then you've got, Russia not sending anybody to the Munich Security Conference upcoming, which I believe, you know, usually Lavrov goes. So, you know, there's this kind of thing is worrisome. Of course, Russia continues to say it has no plans to invade, but the U.S. continues to say that, you know, look out for a possible staged provocation. And then another thing to watch is this, it's not a bill, but a proposition in the Duma to call on Putin to recognize the Russia-backed entities in eastern Ukraine as independent countries. Now, I believe the Duma Council is discussing that today. So that's another thing that, you know, could be developing over this week and playing into the whole decision-making process.
But you know what, Steve, if I may add a little bit?
Absolutely.
The most interesting thing is that the possibility of war is more discussed in Western media than in Russian media right now. Mm-hmm. And in spite of everything, in spite of the large number of troops on the border, Ukrainian intelligence now say that it's close to 150,000 troops, military personnel at the border. In spite of all this, half of Ukrainians, according to the recent polls, do not believe that the conflict is not even imminent, but possible. Mm-hmm. And there were no polls in Russia that we could trust in this area. But from what I see in the social media, in the Russian social networks, people still do not believe that something like this is possible. In spite of the fact that the military rhetoric pointing at Ukrainian side and Russian media is stating that Ukrainians concentrated troops on the border to seize back Donbas area. Mm-hmm. In spite of all this, people do not believe that that the war is possible. And those who believe, I saw a lot of resentment. There is now the campaign in social media where people put Ukrainian flag on their avatar in support of Ukraine. A lot of posts on social media start with, I'm against the war, or stop the war preparations. Even the nationalists and like hardliners, like General Ivashov, all of a sudden made public statements that this is complete lunatism to do something like this, to prepare something like this against the neighboring countries. In spite of the fact that there are repressions against everybody who comes out on the street and holds a poster, even though it's not prohibited by law, but those people are arrested. There were several manifestations and several one-person piquets against the war. Yesterday in Yekaterinburg, there was a protest against the preparation for the war. So there is a lot of resentment in the society, and people are discussing to what extent are we responsible for what Kremlin is doing. What is my responsibility if something like this happens? And this is something I would say new that started maybe several weeks ago only. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, I looked through the Twitter of Margarita Simonyan, the head of RT, who is very active in social media. And for example, she reacts on everything, usually. There is not a single word, practically, about the Kremlin's preparation for the war, about Kremlin's negotiations with the West right now. The only thing that she mentioned was that the West is creating this hysteria. Otherwise, not a single word, which is, for me, very interesting. Very interesting because she is like a barometer.
Right. And I mean, I think part of that may be that Russia wants to, you know, if it does take military action, if it does invade or attack Ukraine, you know, it's definitely going to, the government is definitely going to want to make it seem like this is, you know, a reaction, a response to something that Ukraine has done and egged on by the West. So there's I think there's quite a bit of propaganda along those lines, you know, but less or maybe very little kind of that would suggest that Russia is preparing to go to war. And you, what you mentioned about the protests and the and what people are saying, you know, in real life and on social media, I do think that, I mean, that sounds new to me as well, certainly. And it's quite interesting. And we'll see, you know, I guess we'll see maybe to what degree that may affect plans. There are a lot of different opinions on that, I think, in terms of, you know, how, to what degree does Putin believe he needs the support of the people for something like this. So, you know, obviously very tense moments this week, and we will be watching closely. Now, this tension over Russia's military buildup and Moscow's demands also for sweeping restrictions, sorry, on NATO membership and NATO deployments has been mounting since last fall. And it's really drawn attention away from developments inside Russia itself. I think, you know, for the media, for governments, drawn attention away from a continuation, basically, of the intense clampdown on dissent, civil society, and independent media that took a turn for the worse or was stepped up after opposition leader Alexei Navalny returned to Russia in January 2021, a little over a year ago, following the near-fatal nerve agent poisoning that he blames on Putin. And Navalny was arrested at the airport back then, and he's been behind bars ever since. He's now serving a 2.5-year prison term, but now he faces a new trial. I believe there are preliminary hearings starting this week at the prison where he's incarcerated. And this could result, it's a trial on, I guess, charges that he embezzled from his own organization. And he could be sentenced to 10 years, up to 10 years in prison if he's convicted. And meanwhile, another stark manifestation of this clampdown is the 5-year prison sentence handed down last week to a 16-year-old boy in a terrorism case that involved something he allegedly planned to do essentially in a computer game, not in real life, as far as I understand. And the 16-year-old Nikita Uvarov was convicted of undergoing training for the implementation of a terrorist act. That's the language. He and two friends were accused of planning to insert the headquarters of the Russian Federal Security Service, or FSB, into the popular video game Minecraft so that players could blow it up. Again, in the game, not in real life. Irina, you know, what do you think these two cases say about what's happening in Russia in 2022? Obviously, the Russian service has been covering them closely.
Yeah, well, Steve, I think that those two cases are similar in several aspects. The first is that both court hearings and both you know, all the investigation surrounding those two cases is not transparent. And both are political victims, actually, because they either went against the authorities or refused to cooperate. And when I'm saying that a political victim is Uvarov's case actually shows very clearly that you can be punished for simply not cooperating with the authorities, because there were three guys, and two were released on parole because they agreed to so-called cooperate with the investigation and pointed finger at the third. And the third, Uvarov, was the guy with principles, and he said, no, I'm innocent. I didn't do anything. I didn't plan anything. And he was sentenced. By the way, speaking about some sort of new activity in Russia, Uvarov's case was so shocking because of the cruelty of the sentence for something that the person didn't do and didn't plan in reality. As you pointed out, it's a game. So people were so shocked that there are now quite a lot of petitions going around where people just demand to overrule the sentence in the future appeal court, which of course will take place. And there were also some manifestations and one-person pickets in St. Petersburg yesterday, for example, over the weekend. So people are shocked with what they saw, even with the lots and lots of cases of sentences of this kind in Russia right now, cruel and not based on real real deeds of the people. As for Navalny, right now we are getting reports that, first of all, the hearing of the court will take place in the colony, in right. Vladimir region, and Pokrov, which is quite unusual, because in order to do something like this, the person has to be seriously sick and not being able to walk. Then in this case, the court would move to this person whose case considered.
Right.
It's not the case with Navalny, so there is no even legal reason to move the court hearings to the prison facility, except for what they want is they don't want Navalny to be heard or seen. Right now we're getting press releases from the Lefortovo court that will hear Navalny's case tomorrow, that they actually arranged some sort of facility in the colony for journalists, but the number of journalists will be very limited because of the Omicron pandemic in Russia. So we don't know how many journalists and who will be able to get inside and on what conditions also. Actually, altogether, if you look at the cases against Navalny right now and those two that they will start considering tomorrow, and that's the $4.7 million embezzlement, alleged embezzlement by Navalny of the money on his campaign, and he allegedly insulting the judge. Altogether, it comes to 15 years of prison sentence if he's found guilty, and we don't have any doubts that he would be found guilty. So that's quite a lot, but that was completely expected because everybody understands that Navalny will be in prison as long as Putin is in power. So this has nothing to do with justice system. This has nothing to do with what he did and what he did not. The Kremlin just wants him to be out of the sight, and this court that will take place tomorrow demonstrates it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, for a long time, people were talking about, okay, Navalny's serving 2.5 years now. I think he would be getting out before the presidential election 2024, you know, in which Putin has now enabled himself to run. He can run in 2024 and again in 2030. You know, so potentially Putin could remain president into 2036. Now, you know, people have been talking about this for a long time, that the government may want to keep Navalny in prison throughout Putin's rule, you know, and now this is becoming a real, you know, a real possibility with these, with the trials. Yeah, I was unaware of the 15-year sentence possibility. So, you know, that's obviously going far into the future, and it's just a, well, it's a, I mean, it's a bleak prospect. So we will be watching those court cases as well. And we're running out of time. We'll have to wrap it up here. Irina, thanks very much for joining me.
Oh, thank you for inviting, Steve.
Okay, great to talk to you. I'll be back next Monday, and please keep an eye out on Friday for my Week in Russia newsletter. Thanks for listening.